Okay, we're still in the book of Genesis, no surprise there. Turn to Genesis chapter 8, and hopefully we'll finish chapter 8 and get into chapter 9 today. So, excuse me, we've been through the first part of chapter 8, Moses builds an ark, the rains come, 40 days and 40 nights rain on the earth, rain coming down, waters from below, floods the earth. We get specific details. I forget what the cubits is now, but basically 22, 20-some feet above the highest mountains the water is. We see 150 days as mentioned there. The process takes place. We get some details. And we're about verse 7, verse 8. Verse 7 says, and he sent forth a raven once the waters had started to recede and the ark rested in place in the mountains, the range of Ararat. And we talked about that location and different things. We'll back up there real quick. And it came to pass at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark, which he had made, and sent forth a raven, which went forth to and fro until the waters were dried up from off the earth. Also he sent forth a dove from him to see if the waters were abated off the face of the earth, but the dove found no rest for the sole of her foot, and she returned to him in the ark, for the waters were on the face of the whole earth. And then he put forth his hand and took her and pulled her in unto him into the ark. So Noah is testing the situation that's out there by sending out this dove, which will come back if it can't find a resting place. The purpose of this. Just to see what the situation is out there, other places other than where they're just resting. Again, verse 10, and he stayed yet another 7 days. And again, he sent forth the dove out of the ark. It probably was dark some places in the ark, but that's not what we're talking about. And the dove came into him in the evening, and lo, in her mouth was an olive leaf plucked off. So Noah knew that the waters were abated off the earth. Does that mean that there were no waters anywhere? No, it means that they had lowered to a point. Some vegetation had started to grow, and the olive, or the dove, could pluck an olive leaf off of something growing, and that let Noah know that the situation was changing at that point in time. And he stayed yet another 7 days and sent forth the dove, which returned not again unto him anymore. Obviously meaning that the dove found some place to land and to find some kind of nourishment. And it came to pass, verse 13, so all of this takes place, all this time goes on, and it says, and it came to pass in the 601st year, in the first month, the first day of the month, the waters were dried up from off the earth, and Noah removed the covering from the ark, and looked, and behold, the face of the ground was dry. And Noah said, good, I can get off. No. We'll see that Noah, even after being on the ark for this long period of time, still waited for God to tell him, as we get a couple of verses down. So the ground is dry, at least out of the ark. Noah opens the door. So this is the 601st year, the first month, the first day he notices this. And in the second month, so here's another month and 7 and 20 days. So another month and 26 days, 27 days, almost 2 full months, and the earth was dried. So Noah has spent all this time in the ark. How long did Noah spend in the ark total? 378 days. If the months are 30 days long, which we're assuming it would work out to 378 days from, and remember, God had shut them in the ark, how long? 7 days before the flood started. And it's been a full year and months and 20 and 7 and 10 days by the time you add them all up. So it's over a year that they were in the ark. That's the point, not specifically how many days. But we know that it was over a year. You ever stop and think about that? That's a long time. Ever get cabin fever? You know, you're in your house, it's winter, you can't really go outside and do a whole lot, although we still do, right? You still go out to the grocery store unless you're stocked up for all winter and you don't leave. But when spring comes, we're ready to get out, right, and do things. Noah and his family are boxed in there for a full year. Just let that sink in. And even the faith that it would have taken to be patient for a year's time. We pray for different situations and we want things to be resolved quickly, don't we? Yet they had to wait a full year plus a little to see where this journey that God had put them on was going to take them and what situation they were going to be in when they got off the ark. They had no idea what it was going to look like. Go ahead.
Let's all go live in Myrna's barn.
I don't think we want to live in Myrna's barn for a year. I don't want to spend a whole day in there. But anyhow. Right, right. They had what they needed. So God had provided in that sense, giving Noah the knowledge to know how much to pack in provisions and what to pack. So they were provided for, they were safe. God had cared for them, God had taken care of them. They hadn't overturned. We talked about even the stability of the ark and the design of that. All these things God had planned and they were safe and God had taken care of them. Pastor.
On the downside of that, dark side, whatever, I think of over a year.
That you wonder
where they got their but, drinking water
yeah.
for well over a year.
Yeah.
Stick a pipe out the window. Yeah. Finally, rainwater those 40 days.
Hold a bucket out there. Yeah. Again, details that we don't know. We've talked about this. God left out a lot of details, but we're given sufficient details to understand that this was a global flood, that God had prepared a place for them, that God had provided for them, and God had provided what was needed to, and we'll get to this, repopulate the earth. So whether or not we have all the details, and some of the other details we've talked about we don't have, but again, it doesn't really matter. God said this is what took place, and by faith we accept what we have here. And even all the evidences that we see in the world today, we've talked about this, the layers, the different strata in earth, and how they were formed, how they had to have been formed, and different things that scientifically we can take a look at. We can, or we're just reassured, if you will, in different ways, that the biblical account is true. Man has tried for years to come up with another way to explain the formations in the earth by not accepting the biblical account, because man desires to ignore God and ignore the truth of his word. And so when you're confronted with evidences that you have to explain, you have to come up with a different way.
Seashells to on top of the mountain.
Yes. How do you explain salt sea creatures in the middle of the continent or on top of mountains, or even how the layers were formed in the Grand Canyon that we see all over the place? All sorts of things that they have found that modern scientists don't want to, don't know how to explain, so they come up with different ideas. I just heard of another one. They are starting to understand that the layers in the earth were formed, had to have been formed by flood waters. They wanted to say that they formed over billions of years, but they have, for instance, the different places where trees are standing upright in the different layers in the earth. Well, if each layer is a billion years or even 100 million years, how does that tree not rot and still stay up there to be, you know, 100 million years, 100 million years, 100 million? Wood doesn't last that long. So they can't explain that. So now they've accepted the fact that there has to be a global flood of some sort. The latest one that I've heard is now there was a meteor that hit the earth and killed off most of the life on earth and caused things out of balance, and that created a flood. So they've had to accept the flood part of it, but they want to come up with a different way. It wasn't God. Because if they accept it was God, then they have to accept the rest of the word. So they come up with some other way. So now, off the top of their head, they come up with some other theory that they're going to try to prove instead of taking the truth of nature that we see and accepting the truth. So anyhow, here we go. And God spake unto Noah, saying, go forth of the ark, thou, thy wives, and thy sons' wives with thee. Bring forth with thee every living thing that was with thee of all flesh, both fowl and of cattle and of every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth, that they may breed abundantly in the earth, be fruitful and multiply upon the earth. God told somebody else to be fruitful and multiply on the earth. Who was that? Adam and Eve. And they did. And unfortunately, God found that the whole earth was sinful and had to judge that. So, verse 20, first thing that we recorded that Noah does is what?
Worship the Lord.
Worship. Even in, and stop and think about it. God says, okay, the door has been open. You've waited for me to say that you can exit. What it looks like, we don't know exactly. Obviously, it's not the same world that Noah left. Way more barren than what it was. We'll get into some other details as well. But obviously, they're embarking into something new and something they've never seen before, unknown. First thing that Noah does, that's recorded, is he worships God. What does he do? He builds an altar and took of every clean beast and of every clean fowl and offered burnt offerings on the altar. Remember, we talked about of the clean animals, and again, we don't have a description of exactly what the clean animals are, but you could assume that what God describes later on is what the clean animals were, but again, we don't know for sure. But of those clean animals, God said what?
Take seven.
Take seven. No, whether it was three pairs and an odd, or what? However, there was an odd one. I don't know that Noah knew when the odd one came on the ark, or when God brought them on, that that was the purpose for this, that he was going to offer an offering a year from now. I don't know that Noah knew, but this is what he did. So of every clean beast, of every clean fowl, offered burnt offerings on the altar. So that means of the clean beast, or we would assume the more domesticated animals, Noah takes What amount? What percentage? 1/7 of all the clean animals, and offers those as a burnt offering to the Lord. As you disembark from the ark, okay, you're Noah now and his family. So you're getting off the ark. You're seeing, well, there's not a lot of vegetation around here. There's not a lot of fruit. If I'm going, maybe I've brought some plants on the ark for provisions. I don't know. If I've got to plant them in the ground to grow things, how long does it take to grow things? Several months, before I'm going to get any sustenance off of them. So I've got to count on this livestock that's with me. And yet he takes 1/7 of that livestock and offers it to the Lord. This is a step of faith on Noah's account, to take this vast amount, it's a vast amount of offerings that he offers to the Lord. So even this is a step of faith on Noah's account. So he offers one of every clean on the altar. And God smelled a sweet savor, and the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground anymore for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I smite any more every living thing as I have done. excuse me. The Lord smelled a sweet savor. We see this in Scripture throughout. In other words, he heard and respected the offering that Noah had given, basically by faith, right? That's what God understands here. By faith, Noah gave God an offering. And God accepts that offering. And he says to Noah, in this circumstance, and again, Noah's stepping off into a new world that he has no idea how this is going to work out. God says to him, I will not again curse the ground anymore for man's sake. In other words, don't think that he's saying, I'm taking away the curse from the Garden of Eden. He says, I will not curse the ground. In other words, I will not judge the whole earth again in this way anymore for man's sake. And it's interesting here. What's the next statement that you see? For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. God understands man's heart. I want to read a little paragraph here. The reason for this promise, the promise that he won't curse the earth anymore, seems at first a little strange, because it says, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. This would seem to be justification for judging the earth again, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? Man's heart is evil, and his imagination is that way from his youth up. Oh, by the way, if you thought kids were innocent, guess what? They're not. Let's keep going. Rather than for promising not to do so, except for the great paradox, for the love and grace of God. Here we see God's grace and his love for mankind. Again, here's a testimony to both what theologians call original sin and universal depravity, and also to God's redeeming mercy. Because man is helpless to save himself. Why is man helpless to save himself? Because he's evil from his youth. Man's born with a sin nature is what he's saying here. Man can't save himself. his very thoughts, born and nurtured in sin, he desperately needs the grace of God. On the basis of an atoning sacrifice, God's salvation and blessing are received by faith. Thus, for the very reason that man is completely unable to save himself, therefore God saves him. Truly is the God of all grace. Noah had found grace in the eyes of the Lord, and through his faithful obedience and believing sacrifice, so have multitudes of descendants. He indeed comforted us. Remember, his father talked about him comforting us in our labor and our toil. Noah did that, comforting us in the fact that he believed God and by faith did what God asked him to do. So even though man's imagination of his heart is evil from his youth, God says, I will not smite man this way again. And he says again, neither will I smite any more every living thing as I have done. How long is this promise going to last? Read the next verse. The next verse says, while the earth remaineth. In other words, while this earth remains here, and then he gives some details, seed time and harvest, what's that? When's seed time?
Spring.
Harvest is fall. So we have seasons, spring and fall. Cold and heat. Winter and summer. Winter and summer. Summer and winter. Day and night shall not cease. Did you notice some things here that are new for Noah to deal with? Cold and heat. What environment did he grow up in? Warm. Probably not too hot, not too cold. We talked about that. Probably a fairly stable environment, stable temperature, not great swings from cold to hot. Lush forest.
Sounds
tropical, but not necessarily overly hot like tropical is now. Right, right. So from that environment, now he's has to deal with cold and heat.
The real world.
The real world, yeah, what we deal with now. Cold in the wintertime, hot in the summer. You say, well, tropical is hot. Yes, it is. But more than likely, it was comfortable for mankind at that point in time. Some people like 80s. I don't. Some people like 90s. I don't. I don't know anybody that likes temperatures in 100 and on up. Do we have temperatures in the world today, 100 and on up in the summertime? Sure we do. Some places most of the year it's that temperature. So there is heat to deal with that was not the same as pre-flood. There is cold to deal with that's not the same as pre-flood. There are seasons that were not there pre-flood. The whole world works differently after the flood and what took place during the flood. So everything is working different, but God says it's going to continue on and will not cease as long as the earth remains. At some point, though, we know in the New Testament that the earth is not going to remain. I'll read this paragraph. The duration of God's precious promise to Noah would be as long as the earth remained. Someday, however, the day of the Lord will come. At that time, in 2 Peter 3:10, the earth also and all the works that are therein shall be burned up. All the works that are therein. That's an interesting statement. Let me keep reading. Then the very elements will disintegrate and all the effects of the curse on these elements removed before they are brought together again. Interesting. The judgment that comes on the earth and the earth will be burned up is to remove, part of it is to remove the evidence of the curse. What evidence do we see of the curse? Everything you look at today is pretty much evidence of the curse, or contains evidence of the curse. Listen to this statement. I never thought about this. The fossils in the rocks are evidence of the curse, aren't they? Because the curse involves death. There was no death prior to the curse. Fossils are evidence of death, aren't they? Even the fossils in the rocks, along with other worldwide witnesses of the cataclysmic flood, will also disintegrate and disappear. So until that point, God says, I will not destroy the earth. I will not destroy what I've created because of man's sinful nature. Because that's why he destroyed it the first time. Excuse me, let's keep going. Verse 9. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. Let's back up Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. Back up there real quick. Genesis 1, 28 says, "And God blessed them and said unto them, Adam and Eve, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth." That's what he told Noah and his family. "And subdue it and then to have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth." Let's see what God says this time. Does he repeat that same statement? What does he say? "And the fear of you and the dread or terror of you shall be upon every beast of the earth." Whoa, that's way different. It doesn't say that man at this point will have dominion or control over the animals anymore. At this point in time, now the animals are afraid of mankind. Let me continue reading. "Upon every beast of the earth, upon every fowl of the air, upon all that moveth on the earth, upon all the fishes of the sea, into your hand they are delivered." Interesting. Are animals afraid of mankind? Yes, for the most part, wild animals are. Interesting here. Did you see the word cattle mentioned here in this verse? No. Did cattle get off of the ark? Yes. Back here, if you back up verse 17, it says, "And of the cattle." Cattle is thought to mean domesticated, what we consider domesticated animals. But it's not mentioned here. Are domesticated animals afraid of mankind? No. So there's a difference between the domesticated animals, the cattle in this circumstance, which are not mentioned that they'll be afraid, and wild animals. Ever try to walk up to a squirrel? Ever had a chance to pet a bird? Unless they're injured or been domesticated, chances are no. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't certain circumstances where maybe once in a while the exception to the rule, but for the most part, animals are afraid of us. We continue on. God says in instructions to Noah and his family, "Every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you, even as the green herb I have given you all things." What's God saying here?
You can eat anything that lives.
Exactly. This is a change. Because prior to the flood, man ate what?
Salad.
There you go. Nuts, berries, plants, vegetables. I love fruit. Some vegetables too, I'll admit it, but some I don't. But that's what man ate, what grew from the ground. That's what God had provided for man to consist on. That's what man ate. God says everything has changed from this point on. Animals are afraid of you, and you are now allowed to start eating animals. We talked about this. Were there some that possibly were doing that prior to the flood? Yes, that's quite possible that there were some that disregarded God's directions and ate animals before the flood. But at this point, God says, "I've removed that restriction." Now, later on, God will specify which animals he wants them to eat and which not. But at this point, he said, animals are fair game. So you can start eating steak as of right now. The one restriction is what?
Blood.
The blood. But the flesh with the life thereof, which is of the blood. The life that's in your flesh is there because of what?
Blood.
Your blood. Your blood carries nutrients throughout the body. Your blood flushes contaminants from the body. The blood is crucial, and God says you stay away from that. In other words, those who like rare steaks, maybe you're treading on ground you shouldn't. But anyhow, we'll continue with this, and God's statements to Noah and his family, and the changes that they have to undergo as they basically start off in a new world. Hopefully this has been a blessing this morning. Lord bless you. Dismiss, Pastor.
There are those that are working overtime in the world system that are doing everything they can to move us away from eating any meat and returning to a plant-based diet.
Yeah.
Big brother.
Big brother. Okay, you're dismissed.